todo el mundo.
But this was really
1981.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. Few bands defined the late 1970s and early 80s quite like the Cars. Their sleek, synth-driven sound helped shape an era, and at the center of it all was Rick Ocasek, the enigmatic frontman, songwriter, and visionary. In his new biography, Moving in Stereo, author and musician Peter Aaron dives deep into Rick's life, exploring the long road he and Ben Orr traveled before fame, the dynamics within the band, and the legacy that still resonates today. Peter's no stranger to rock himself. He's been a respected music journalist and frontman of the punk band Chrome Cranks. Today, we'll talk about the research, the revelations, and, of course, the rock and roll nightmares that came with life in the Cars. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast.
Hi, Stacey. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here.
You got the scoop because I think your book is the first one, or at least the most comprehensive, on Rick Ocasek's career, which has such a backstory that I didn't know about. It seemed like they appeared out of nowhere, but your book really changes that opinion.
Yeah, Rick and Ben were in several bands before the Cars, so they were both very well-honed artists by the time that the Cars came together, and Rick had a lot of experience as a songwriter as well.
What first drew you to his story and made you want to put his life into book form?
I loved the Cars when they came out when I was a kid, and he always seemed like a very interesting, intense person, and I wanted to learn more about him. It's as simple as that.
Well, I think that's a great way to come into the project because there wasn't all that much information readily available in a single form like you've done. Can you walk us through the research process? What went into capturing Rick's journey, both as a musician and as a person? I also didn't realize how many times he'd been married before.
Yeah, I mean, the being married part, he kept that a secret from even people that were really close to him, his bandmates in the Cars, until they were into, I think it was actually the Candy O tour, and they were playing in Portland, Oregon in 1979. And Greg has told a story before that Rick happened to mention, oh, my son is going to be here tonight. And Greg had only met Rick's second wife, Suzanne, and knew about his son with Suzanne at that time, Aaron, who was like 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, Greg was like, what? You know, and then, you know, the rest of the story came out from there. And that's David Robinson learned at that show. He was hanging around in the dressing room, and there was this teenage kid in there, and was started asking questions. Who is this kid, and why is he in the dressing room? And so, yeah, Rick was like a very kind of a guarded person and covered his tracks really well. And there was really no substantial books about the cars out there. There was one slimmer one that was basically like a band bio, or didn't really get very deep into their story. And that was something that came out, in around 1980, between 80 and 82, somewhere around there. So that was it. There had been a book about Benjamin Orr called Let's Go, which was written by Joe Milliken. And that was it. And most of the interviews that I was, and articles that I was accessing during my research, Rick didn't really show his hand too much, or didn't really talk that much about his past. And you'd see a lot of the same things said over and over again in different ways. Those things were helpful to a certain extent. They were part of the process and the puzzle, but certainly interviewing Greg Hawkes and Dave Robinson was incredibly helpful. But I tracked down Rick's younger sister, Maureen Otkasic-Rohrs, who hadn't spoken with anyone before. I managed to find the drummer for his very first band, that was a band called Id Nirvana, that Benjamin Orr ended up joining a little bit after they'd been together. And that was the beginning of his partnership with Rick, and other people that he'd played with and worked with in the past. Certainly, along with some better known names, Gerald V. Casale of Devo and Martin Rev of Suicide, Doug Gillard from Guided by Voices. So there's people that I talked to from different points in his story, and it was all great to have their thoughts and to draw on as well.
You've titled the book Moving in Stereo, which of course is actually sung by Ben Orr, though
Yeah,
Rick did. Why
yeah.
did you choose that title in particular?
Rick wrote the song, but it's one of their better known songs, of course. That's part of the reason, one of their best known songs. But also, I feel very analogous to Rick's story, which is a story of having dualities and coexisting qualities. Example of that is that he was a singer, main songwriter for one of the biggest pop bands in music, but he also was very drawn to avant-garde music, music that was challenging to the mainstream. And both of those qualities coexisted within him. He's also obviously effusive about wanting to get his music out there, but also a very guarded person. So there's a lot of those kind of twin tangents at play within his personality and his story. And it seemed like that was a good guiding symbolic aspect to embrace during the process.
Yes, and as we touched on a few minutes ago, the fact that Rick and Benjamin were musical partners for many years before the Cars took off. They played in several bands that just never quite clicked. What do you think it is about the Cars that just made it work, whereas other iterations didn't?
I think that it was a lot of it was they'd had experience and really had learned a lot about what to do being in rock and roll bands before then. And I think he was a voracious consumer and follower of music, and he was able to kind of take what was the rising zeitgeist that was going on around the Cars when they were starting, and fuse that with what he already knew and was able to do within the bands that he had before that. Certainly part of it was that the harmonies that he and Ben had developed, which is a defining quality of the cars, especially the early Cars records, especially on the first one. Then combining that with the sort of state-of-the-art electronic and synthesizer sounds that were starting to come into rock and roll at that time, and also the tight, concise songwriting style that punk rock was bringing back, connecting with early rock and roll. And that was something that Rick really identified with, because he originally, what made him want to play music was the first wave of 1950s rock and roll, especially Buddy Holly, which you hear in his style of singing and some of the musical parts that he came up with. So I think all those things coming together at just the right time when the music world was moving in a different direction and people were being, especially younger listeners, were being drawn to a lot of what the Cars had in their sound. I think all of that came together to push them over the top.
That's true. I do remember at the time rockabilly was coming back into vogue with the Stray Cats and some groups like that, the Cramps. But the Cars had a much more like poppy, melodic, but also some kind of synthesizer sound. So there's really nothing quite like them.
No, it's like it, you can hear the kind of elemental rock and roll in what they do, but also it's very futuristic. Space age rockabilly, new wave. Obviously, they're one of the defining bands of new wave, but those things coming together, the closest thing there probably been before that was Roxy Music had a little bit of that, a little bit of 1950s referencing going on in what they were doing, but they were more of an art rock band. And certainly the Cars had a lot of art rock in what they did too, but they leavened their artistic leanings with a lot of very strong pop elements.
Yes, and there was also the stylistic look of the band with the skinny ties and the kind of short-sleeved work shirt like you have on the cover of your book of Rick there. So I feel like that all came together at the right time with MTV. And of course, that is how Rick met his third wife, Paulina Porizkova. Now, I read her book, and their marriage lasted like 3 decades, I think, but it sounds like it really wasn't much of a marriage towards the end. But what do you think kept them together despite the odds?
Oh boy, it's hard for me to say exactly, but I think certainly they had 2 sons, so that's a big incentive right there, I would imagine. They were both busy people. Their careers were propelling them. They were being propelled along in their careers more or less simultaneously. So I don't know. They were very much in love. And I think that even though, from what I understand, and having read Paulina's book also, they were still in love in a different way. But things had just changed with the way that they related to each other.
One thing that I did notice in the book was that success didn't necessarily make things easier within the band. Rick was known to be a bit difficult once the Cars really took off. Now, how did that dynamic play out behind the scenes from those you interviewed? Did they have any perspective or shed any light on that aspect?
I think a lot, from what I understand, a lot of the cracks in that way had were if they were forming, they were exacerbated by the situation with the management. The Cars signed after first couple albums with Elliot Roberts as their manager. And he was a very prominent music manager on the West Coast. It worked with probably the biggest names were Jackson Browne and Joni Mitchell. He'd also worked with Devo. He'd started working with them recently. So that he already had a connection to the new wave generation. But he also still came from a place where he worked with singer-songwriters. And it seemed like he saw the situation with the Cars as, since Rick was the songwriter and sang on a lot of the material, that it was a situation of Rick and these guys that he played with, and that he would confer more with Rick about business decisions. and the others would get left out of the loop. And understandably, they would have been upset. Rick seemed like he just went along with that. And the other situation is that since he was the songwriter of the group, he was making more of the royalties, being the songwriter on top of the royalties that everybody got just as being a musician in the band. And that seemed like that caused some resentment as well. That, yeah, we got to the point where he didn't really economically need to tour as much as the other guys did because he was making money from the songwriting on top of the performance royalties from the records or the money that they made from their shows and all of that. Yeah, he didn't really got to not like touring, which happens to probably most musicians, a lot of musicians after they've been doing it long enough. And he also, when he decided he didn't want to tour anymore, which he had been with Paulina for a little while before that. They were starting a family. And I think he felt like he certainly hadn't been around for the early childhoods of the four sons that he'd had before he hooked up with Paulina. So I guess he felt like maybe he had a third chance to redeem himself in those ways. So I think there's a few different things. Also, members have said, other bands say this when they get in the same situation, if we just taken more breaks, maybe we've been able to work it out. But yeah, I think all of that, from what I know, is what came together and really made things difficult within the band.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, lastly, what do you hope that music lovers, whether they're casual fans or diehard Cars devotees, will take away from moving in stereo?
I hope that, I think foremost, I hope they get what I got from the process of writing it, and that's rediscovering the music and appreciating it in different ways and really realizing what made Rick so unusual and unique as an artist. And I hope it'll bring the focus back to the music itself, as I think that's really what he wanted more than anything. Was he loved music. He was music is what he was made of, and I think that you just would want people to appreciate not just his own music but other music as well, and maybe be led to some of the acts that he liked through the Cars music.
I feel like that was my takeaway, and I certainly was entertained and learned a lot. Now, where can people get moving in stereo?
They can get it on the usual online retailers. I won't say any names, but they can get it directly from Bloomsbury Press, which is the parent company of the publisher Backbeat Books. And they certainly, I think, would hope before they went anywhere else, would go to their local independent bookstore.
And can we find and follow you on social media, or how do we keep in touch with your future endeavors?
I have a Facebook page. It's called Peter Aaron, Musician and Author. I would refer folks to that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate your time and congratulations on a job well done.
Stacey, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a total kick and privilege.
Thank you. This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's ROCK-N-ROLL-Nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening.